There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before we get started, please rate and review our show. It helps people find us. On this episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly, this year's U.S. Open isn't just about tennis. It's also a farewell to Serena Williams, who announced that she's retiring after the tournament. SI senior writer John Wertheim joins me to discuss Serena's chances on the court, her impact on sports and pop culture, and her legacy as we say goodbye to the GOAT. I'm your host, John Gonzalez. From Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio, this is Sports Illustrated Weekly. John Wertheim, welcome back to Sports Illustrated Weekly.
Hey, good to be here. How are you?
Always love having you on. The very first time we had you on, we talked about Tom Brady being the GOAT in his sport. You're sort of our resident GOAT whisperer. I want to talk to you about the U.S. Open in tennis. But that event will mark a goodbye to the best to ever do it. It will be the end for Serena Williams. I'm going to rattle off some stats here, John. 23 Grand Slam titles, 14 Grand Slam doubles titles with her sister Venus, an Olympic gold in singles, three Olympic golds and doubles also with Venus, a record 365 matches, one at the major. I could go on and on and on, John. Put in perspective how great her career has been.
I have whiplash from swiveling my head at all those numbers. No, I mean, I think part of this is like these numbers are a joke. And I feel like we rattle them off and they almost get cheapened because it says, you know, we feel like we're giving a Wikipedia bio and we never actually, I mean, it's just incredible what she has done. And everyone sort of has a favorite number. One of mine is 1999, which is the first major that she won.
Compton, California, to U.S. Open champion.
That was a quarter century ago in a sport where most of the best players, once they hit 25, certainly 30, historically haven't been particularly formidable as players. I think some of this in Serena's legacy is about these numbers and the titles. And see, we don't think of her. She's one of the greatest doubles players of all time.
Yeah.
She's one of the greatest American Olympic athletes of all time. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are all sorts of dimensions that she hasn't gotten her due on. But to me, I think a lot of it, too, is just this legacy she leaves that has nothing to do with statistics. And what she showed, that there is no one way to get to the top of this mountain. And you can resist convention and you can do things your way. And in the end, you play twice as long as you were supposed to and won about 10 times as many trophies as anyone thought you ever would. And I think from the racial composition of the players in the U.S. Open to the economics of tennis to, I mean, there's so many ways that she's left a mark on this sport that have nothing. I mean, I won't say nothing, but I mean, they're tangentially related to the back of the baseball card stats.
Yeah, I'm really, a couple of things that you brought up there that I want to unpack, but I'm glad that you mentioned 1999 and the longevity because, you know, you and I, it's become a theme whenever we talk about these athletes who have gotten older but keep playing at a high level. Serena's 40, she'll be 41 in September. It's a grueling sport, John. There's a lot of wear and tear on your body when you're running that much. It's really remarkable that she's been able to play this well for this long.
And, you know, we would be remiss if we did not throw childbirth in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Being pregnant, winning a Grand Slam title. Now, I've never done either, but I hear both can be challenging. Well, apparently Serena Williams did them both at the same time earlier this year. That's right. She was about 8 weeks pregnant when she won the Australian Open.
No, when she started, when the Williams sisters started, you'll notice they were not, they have not spent a lot of weeks ranked number one, Venus in particular. For all their winning, they haven't held the number one ranking that long, and that's in part because of the way the ranking system is set up. And for years and years and years, there was this complaint that, oh yeah, they win a lot, but they don't play a full schedule. And if LeBron, you know, if Michael Jordan only played in the playoffs, of course he'd be fresh. And there was a lot of condemnation in tennis that neither Venus nor Serena played as many events as people liked. Of course, there was a lot of naked self-interest there. These were promoters that wanted them to play their event. This was a tour that was trying to sell sponsorships. Wouldn't you rather have the best players playing 20 times and not 11? And as usual, they were right and conventional wisdom was wrong. And it's no, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence that a lot of their peers burnt out or ceased playing in their late 20s or they retired and re-retired. Part of this is because they were really smart early on in the beginning and they didn't overplay and they didn't get burnt out. I think something that people forget about tennis too, a lot of it's physical wear and tear. You know, you can't take possessions off, right? You can't say, hey coach, just I want to come off the bench tonight or I'd like to DH, I'm feeling a little sore. But in addition to that, there are no home games. So, I mean, anyone that has traveled, let's take Jordan, for instance. No, I mean, anyone that gets on a plane and, you know, all right, Serena's not waiting at the Hertz counter like the rest of us, but still, there's something really grueling about jet lag and time zones and eating at odd hours. And apart from the physical wear and tear, I think people sometimes don't realize the wear and tear that comes with a global workplace where every single week is an international business trip.
You also had mentioned, you know, that she is a mother, she's a Black person, a Black woman in a sport that doesn't exactly have a history of venerating either. I don't think, John, that we can undersell her social impact, right? I mean, she's had a massive cultural imprint that goes beyond just tennis, right? I mean, it's global and it's not even sport specific. She almost transcends all of that.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to me how many people, you know, you say, oh, I like tennis or I cover tennis. I always say it's my guilty pleasure. And people say, oh my God, I love Serena Williams. And I'm always amazed how many people have such strong feelings for her, usually overwhelmingly fond. Didn't always used to be that way, but I think that's another dimension to the story we can talk about. But a lot of people that they love Serena Williams and they've never seen her play tennis. They've never seen her on the court. This is not about forehands and backhands. It's what she represents. It's what she's overcome. It's how she dresses. It's how she conducts herself. She has millions and millions of fans who have never seen her hit a tennis ball. I don't think you have that with many other athletes. I don't think people say, like, I love LeBron James, and isn't basketball the one where they play 5-on-5? I mean, there are so many people that she's won over that have never seen her go to work. It's all about what she represents.
You hinted at something there that I think I do want to talk about. Her popularity now, where she has almost universal support as she's going into retirement. But at the beginning of the career, as you mentioned, wasn't always like that. Took a lot of heat, a lot of controversy. How did that all change?
I mean, I think it would be naive not to think that her winning had a lot to do with it. And some people are simply front runners. And by the time you win your 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th major, maybe you've won some people over. But no, I mean, I think it's one of the aspects of the story. I mean, so often with athletes, you saw this with Bill Russell, for example, or with, I mean, in tennis, we see this, you know, Pete Sampras and Steffi Graf, and we didn't know what we had till we were gone. And boy, if we could do it again, we would have had so much more appreciation. That is not the case here. There was a lot of friction when Venus and Serena came on the scene. Some of this was the way they comported themselves, and it was sort of institutional bias, and there were a lot of, I would say there were a lot of microaggressions. I didn't see a lot of sort of flagrant racism. There's the incident at Indian Wells that people talk about, but that notwithstanding, to me, it was a lot more subtle than that, and it was a lot more sort of coded language and issues that they had to respond to that other players never would. And in short order, I mean, I think fairly early on, they won, and the critics shrunk in voice and in number. And I don't know if we can timestamp it, but pretty soon this just became this absolute love-in. And I mean, the reception Serena Williams is going to get, win or lose, at the U.S. Open is going to be like nothing we've seen. A few years ago, I don't know if you remember, when Serena was going for the Grand Slam, she didn't get it, but she won the first three legs of the major. She comes to the U.S. Open. There's a lot of pressure. And in one of her matches, she plays Venus.
Game, second match, Serena Williams, 6-1, 6-2.
And it was just an absolute sort of celebration of the sisters and everything they had achieved. And it wasn't always that way. And I think that, you know, one of the nice things about playing till you're age 40 is you get your due. And, you know, some of this is probably, you know, Richard Williams, who was a lightning rod for controversy, he became less and less prominent. I mean, some of this was, you know, I would say that tennis finally started hugging the Williams sisters, and they hugged back. Their colleagues were a lot more complimentary.
Yeah.
Venus and Serena were a lot more social in the locker room. I mean, this was really kind of a love story. And you don't always get this in sports. You get a lot of, boy, people missed the boat on this, or, you know, boy, it's too bad that athlete had to go through so much, because only in retrospect we realize how extraordinary they were. Midway through this story, everyone fell in love with Venus and Serena, as they should have. And what you're left with is an athlete who, I mean, honestly, Serena's not going to win the U.S. Open. She's almost 41 years old, as you say. She's won one match in the last year, and yet she's going to be the story of this tournament.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the send-off. She deserves all the flowers that she'll be given. But you just sort of asked my next question. What are we looking at here? How long do you think she'll be around? She faces Danka Kovinic, who's currently ranked number 80 in the world in the first round of the U.S. Open. Recent results for Serena haven't been Serena-esque. Is she going to go on a little bit of a run and give herself a good send-off here, or might it be an early bow-out?
I mean, I got to say, the draw gods did her a favor. She's had some rotten luck at the U.S. Open. If nothing else, the draw gods did her right. I mean, it was entirely possible. She could have drawn, and she's unseeded, right? So she could have drawn any player in the draw. I mean, Naomi Osaka, she could have drawn whoever, Coco Gauff. That did not happen. But, you know, I mean, in the French Open final, Iga Świątek, the number one, played Coco Gauff, who's sort of the ascending American player. Their combined age is less than Serena.
Wild.
40.9 or whatever she, you know, 41 in late September. That's a big number, especially for a player who doesn't come in with a lot of match play, doesn't come in with a lot of momentum. Again, who's a full-time mother. It's extraordinary what Serena has accomplished. I mean, honestly, I don't even, just keep this between us and don't put it on like a pot.
But okay.
I mean, honestly, you sort of kind of hope. Her last set of tennis, she lost 6-love. And it was to Emma Raducanu, who won the U.S. Open last year.
Game, oh, wow. Set match. To Sassolaro. 6-4, 6-3.
Say hello to Emma Raducanu.
But Emma Raducanu also hasn't won, you know, she's sub-500 this year. So I kind of hope Serena goes out there and gives it a competitive match. If she wins a round or two, so much the better. But we'd all would love to see it happen. We all know how to write, B Hollywood movies. The idea that Serena Williams would win this 24th major, it's kind of, fanciful might be. I mean, it ain't going to happen.
A couple of rounds would be great. That would make for a quality B movie anyway.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
So if it's not going to be Serena, John, who do we like from the women's side?
That is a great question. Because the women's draws are often open. This is like open. I mean, this is we're coming off a year also in which a player ranked outside the top 100 won the previous U.S. Open. So if you ever needed, any given Sunday, if you ever needed sort of proof positive that anyone can win these things, you need to only go back 1 year. I don't know. I mean, I think Coco Gauff's got a real chance.
A superb victory for 18-year-old Coco Gauff.
Her winning is one of these when, not ifs, and why not now? But it's literally any of 40. I mean, Naomi Osaka's won twice since 2018. She's a tremendous player. She doesn't come in with a lot of momentum. I mean, they're literally any of 50 players have a decent chance to win this tournament.
I kind of like that. I kind of like the toss-up aspect of it and not knowing. What about on the men's side? I can't believe we're still talking about this particular issue, but Novak Djokovic will miss the U.S. Open because the U.S. requires foreign visitors to be vaccinated. Shocker, he's still not. He's not coming. You can address that if you want or not, but handicap the men's side for us.
On Djokovic, I just can't get over the sort of the framing of this as active versus passive. I mean, there is one thing he could do to be eligible that billions of people have done worldwide that, every other player in the top 100 of men's tennis has done. The idea that they're not letting him play, or even, I mean, the USTA had this sort of clumsily worded press release about, unfortunately he won't be here. Well, he has agency. He could have done something that literally billions of people have done with no adverse effect, and we wouldn't be having this conversation. So I think, whatever. He has his convictions. He's entitled to them. He's not free of the consequences of those. But I think this framing of sort of who has agency here and who doesn't, I think is kind of important. But in his absence, remember we talked about the wide open women's draw?
I do.
Usually the men's draw, we have three guys and anyone else is a huge upset. Roger Federer is not playing. Rafa Nadal is, but and has not lost in a major this year, but he's been injured and he's played one match since Wimbledon and that was a defeat. The defending champion, Daniil Medvedev, will be seeded number one. I think with the odds makers, he is the favorite, but he's won one tournament since he won the U.S. Open last year. I will go with Carlos Alcaraz.
Oh, it's glorious. And Alcaraz waves the racket around to the acclaim of center court.
Whom you can read all about in an upcoming Sports Illustrated. 19-year-old Spaniard, much like Coco Gauff, he will win one of these. It's just a question of when, and why not now?
I'm glad that you brought up Alcaraz, because as I was thinking about Serena, you had also rattled off some other big names like Osaka, and we talked about Djokovic, and Federer's not playing, and Nadal's getting older. Alcaraz is this interesting young guy who's coming up. Along with him, now that Serena is leaving, I mean, she's leaving a massive hole in tennis and a massive hole in greater pop culture, right? I mean, she, as we mentioned, she transcends all of this. So who fills that void, do you think, from tennis?
It's a great question, because I think it's something that the sport needs, that tennis has always depended on personalities and characters and what they represent. And, you know, Andre Agassi, and I mean, you mm-hmm. go through the list. And when there has been mere excellence without that X factor, it hasn't necessarily punched through. People want crazy attire, and they want Roger Federer's elegance, and they want Andre Agassi's, you know, mullet and his bandanas and his denim shorts. Tennis kind of needs that in a way that other sports don't. I mean, Naomi Osaka would be the obvious answer, but she's had a very, very strange year that hasn't encompassed a lot of winning. I think she's kind of, and yeah, I mean, I think Alcaraz was really special. And I mean, to me, Coco Gauff, like if this whole tennis thing doesn't work out, she has a fallback, which is like president of the United States. I mean, she's just, she's extraordinary. If she were to win, it would really do wonders for this sport. But, you know, I mean, tennis has always had this very strange relationship with personality. But unlike other team sports, you know, there are no conference standings, right? I mean, there's no, it's like boxing. I mean, you really sort of need athletic excellence, but you need something additional. And with Serena, we are missing both of those in a big way.
Yeah, we really will be. And as you mentioned, it's one of those, sometimes you don't realize what you have until it's gone. So she's leaving soon, John. Do we know what she wants to do next?
One thing that we didn't, I mean, this was someone who's always come shrouded in mystery. I mean, so Serena, what's the old jazz cliche? Like, always leave them wanting more. Mm-hmm. You never quite, I mean, she was, I don't want to say impenetrable, but there was always, she always held back. And I think that this mystery, it served her well competitively. I think in retrospect, it probably sort of only added to her image. But who the hell knows is the answer. I mean, she's talked about wanting to expand her family. She has this investment fund that she speaks a lot about. I don't think she necessarily is going to have a lot to do with I mean, there's some players as if they've never left. There's commentating and there's coaching. I don't think we're going to see her much in the tennis world, which is unfortunate, because I think she'd be a great commentator. I just think that's not where her head is now. And I think part of, you know, she won't have a shortage of options, but who knows? I mean, it's easy to see her doing any of 100 things. And I think this sort of work-life balance that she wrote about in this great Vogue essay that I would encourage people to read, sort of the work-life balance that she says she's struggled with these last 5 years, I think is something she'll have to sort of negotiate in her next step. But who knows is the answer. I mean, you could see her running a company, and you could see her living on an island and being a full-time mother. Who knows?
She's the only tennis player, John, man or woman, to win 3 out of 4 Grand Slams 6 times. You know, we've rattled off at the beginning of our conversation all of her records and accolades, which sound so outsized, they're almost unbelievable. Are we being hyperbolic to think that she might be the greatest tennis player, man or woman, full stop, of all time?
You want me to get really hyperbolic?
I'd love to.
Why constrict that to tennis? What she has done in terms of achievement, in terms of versatility, I mean, she's won on every surface and every continent and every, I mean, she's won in every presidential administration from Clinton to Trump. What's the worst thing you could possibly say about her? She's had a couple of on-court outbursts. She's mm-hmm. never been arrested. She's never had a scandal. And then you just look at, and I mean, so some of this is tennis related, right? I mean, you sort of look at players today and it's extraordinary. And I'm not just talking about black women. It's extraordinary how many have said, I never thought I had a future in this sport. And then I saw Serena Williams. My parents were in Venezuela and we didn't have money, but then I saw Serena Williams. I would take that beyond sports. And again, I just think this is a story that ages really, really well. And the objections that may have accompanied her in the beginning in the 90s are now, it would get you fired. I mean, you get canceled for some of the things people said and wrote 25 years ago. The fact that the second best player of this generation happened to be her sister who shared a bunk bed with her. I mean, it's a crazy story. It will age really well. And I think I would go so far. I mean, you find me if we're playing this horribly cliched and trite Mount Rushmore game. I mean, if we're playing this greatest athlete ever, Jordan Ali, blah, blah. I mean, I don't know. Who are you putting ahead of Serena Williams?
It's a hell of a story. It's not over just yet. Make sure to read him on SI.com, like Serena in tennis. He's the GOAT for SI. John Wertheim, thank you for this.
Very kind. Nice talking as always.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And a reminder to please rate and review the show. It helps people find us. Sports Illustrated Weekly is a production of Sports Illustrated and iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. And for more of Sports Illustrated's best stories and podcasts, visit SI.com. This episode of Sports Illustrated Weekly was produced by Jordan Rizzieri, Jessica Yarmosky, and Isaac Lee, who is also our sound engineer. Our senior producers are Dan Bloom and Harry Swartout. Our executive producers are Scott Brody and me, John Gonzalez. Our theme song is by Nolan Schneider. And if you've stuck around this long, we leave you with this. So she's leaving soon, John. Do we know what she wants to do next?
Either crypto or a dispensary. Yeah. I jest.
Who knows, and probably whatever she wants.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.